I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 16th, and we have a lot to talk about. When I started putting this episode of the podcast together, I realized that we're up to episode number 185. Now that's just 15 episodes away from the 200th episode of Real Talk MS, and it feels like we should do something special when we reach that milestone. And I think it's only fair that you have a voice in how we should mark that semi-auspicious occasion. So please get in touch with me and share your ideas about what might be an appropriate way to celebrate 200 episodes of Real Talk MS. You can email me at John, that's J-O-N, at realtalkms.com, or you can call our listener hotline at area code 310-526-2283 and share your thoughts. Of course, there would be no episode 200. Not even an episode 185 without you. And I never take your participation in our weekly conversations for granted. I appreciate your time and attention, your emails, voicemails, and DMs, and I always try to do everything I can to make sure that the time you spend listening to Real Talk MS and participating as a member of the Real Talk MS community is time well spent. So when someone goes to the trouble of letting me know that they're finding value in listening, it's like getting my report card and seeing a big A+ at the top. So today, I want to give a special shout out along with a thank you to Dave Bexfield. Dave is the founder of Active MSers. And if you haven't visited the Active MSers website and signed up for their email newsletter, I'd say you're not only missing out on great information, but you're also missing out on Dave's very unique perspective on living with MS, a perspective that's been well-tempered by Dave's sense of humor. When you visit activemsers.org, among the huge amount of information and resources available at the website, Dave has put together a guide to the best MS resources. You'll find listings for the best MS research conference, the best MS news site, the best MS activity programs, but you'll get more than just listings. Dave provides the pro and the con for every resource mentioned as being best. I'm honored that Real Talk MS is listed as the best MS podcast, and I'll even share Dave's pro and con about Real Talk MS. The pro is that all of our past episodes are online and easy to find. The con is that you probably need to add an eighth day to your week to listen to all of them. So thanks again, Dave Bexfield, for the mention, and I'd recommend listening to just a few episodes at a time. That seems far easier than creating that eighth day. If you'd like to check out Active MSers, and I think you'll like what you find there, you can visit the website at activemsers.org, and I'll include that link in today's show notes. Walk MS 2021 is here, and like so many things, it's going to be a virtual walk this year. I'm walking to honor the memory of my wife Jean, who lived with progressive MS until passing away just a year ago. And I'm hoping that if you aren't already involved in Walk MS, you'll choose to make a donation today. I'm very fortunate that because the National MS Society has partnered with me to produce Real Talk MS, I've never had to worry about selling you a product or setting up a page to raise money for this podcast. But for those of you who'd like to express your appreciation for the podcast, this would be a great way to do it. Think about it. The National MS Society is the largest private funder of MS research in the world. They recruit and provide financial support for future MS research scientists. They offer informative programming like the weekly Ask an MS Expert webcast series, a series, by the way, that thousands of people are watching every single week. And I think their MS Navigators program is second to none when it comes to providing one-to-one individual problem-solving and support for people affected by MS, no matter what kind of problem you might be facing. Every single day, the National MS Society invests in a better future for everyone affected by MS. So I think investing in the MS Society just makes a lot of sense. You can visit realtalkms.com/walkms to make your donation or even sign up to be a part of my virtual Real Talk MS Real Walkers team. But no matter how you choose to participate, it would be great to have your support. One more thing the MS Society invests in is advocacy. Speaking with one clear voice to raise awareness about MS and educate elected officials on the needs of people affected by MS, MS activists have shared our stories, urged action, and created real change. This year, the MS Society's Public Policy Conference is virtual, and that means that you have an opportunity to virtually attend and learn how you can advocate for change on important policy issues affecting the MS community. My guest today is the Executive Vice President of Advocacy and Healthcare Access for the National MS Society, Barry Talenti. And Barry's joining me to talk about the Public Policy Conference and the issues that MS activists will be discussing with our congressional representatives in the days following the conference. But before we get to my conversation with Barry Talenti, there are a few other things that you should know about. Today, there are about a dozen and a half approved disease-modifying therapies for relapsing-remitting MS. And there is exactly one approved disease-modifying therapy for primary progressive MS. And that's one reason why the work of the International Progressive MS Alliance is so important. And we've talked about the Progressive MS Alliance in past podcast episodes. The Alliance has brought together MS patient organizations, research scientists, and people affected by progressive MS from around the world to take up the challenge of progressive MS. About 10 days ago, the Alliance hosted a global webcast focused on accelerating breakthrough treatments for progressive MS. So if you've wondered what this global response to progressive MS looks like or what sort of results it's producing, then I think you'll want to catch the video replay of this webcast. The webcast features Professor Fran Quintana, a Harvard research scientist who's leading one of the international drug discovery networks being funded by the International Progressive MS Alliance. And Dr. Quintana, joined by other experts on the webcast, provides an update on the cutting-edge research into next-generation treatments for progressive MS that his international team is working on. If you'd like to check out the video replay of this webcast, you'll find a link in today's show notes. People who aren't scientists, and that's most of us, probably first heard about nanotechnology by reading science fiction or seeing a movie that painted vivid pictures of swarms of atom-sized robots coursing through a person's system on some sort of sinister mission. Well, if you take away those sinister motives, nanotechnology sounds a lot like science fiction, but it's not. It's the branch of technology that develops specialized particles that are the size of atoms or molecules. And the category of nanotechnology that applies specifically to medicine is appropriately named nanomedicine. Well, at last month's ECTRIMS Forum, a biopharmaceutical company called Clean Nanomedicine presented interim data from its two ongoing Phase 2 clinical trials that are exploring a nanomedicine approach to remyelination. I had the opportunity to sit down with Clean Nanomedicine's chief medical officer, Dr. Robert Glanzman, to learn more about their unique approach to remyelination and the status of their clinical trials. In a moment, we'll hear my conversation with Dr. Robert Glanzman. At the recent ACTRIMS Forum, Clean Nanomedicine presented interim data from two Phase 2 studies that are evaluating the safety and efficacy of Clean's drug candidate, CNMAU8, a bioenergetic nanocatalyst in MS patients. Joining me to explain what all that means and update us on the work that Clene is doing is Dr. Robert Glanzman, Chief Medical Officer at Clene Nanomedicine. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Glanzman.
Thanks, John. Very happy to be here.
Before we get to those clinical trials, I'm hoping you can help our listeners understand what a bioenergetic nanocatalyst is.
That's a great question. So this is a brand new therapeutic category, which has only been actually recently possible due to breakthroughs in physics and material science. So the breakthrough that's the basis for Clene Nanomedicine is the ability to make clean-surfaced, pure nanocrystals, meaning very, very small crystals of therapeutic metals, which remain stable in highly purified water over months to years without the addition of anything else. No other stabilizing agents, no other atoms of any kind. So it's a material science breakthrough using lots of electricity and plasma physics, where we can actually induce atoms of metals to self-organize into crystals and to remain stable in highly purified water for months, years. And that allows these crystals to be taken orally. You drink the aqueous suspension. It's like drinking water, basically, and allows the crystals to enter the body and do all kinds of amazing things. So this is the basis for Clene Nanomedicine.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those amazing things. Can you tell us what CNMAU8 is all about?
Yeah, we haven't quite gotten a trade name yet, so CNMAU8 doesn't exactly roll up the tongue unless you've been in it as long as I have. But we have a host of preclinical models. We've done about every neuroprotective model available where you induce oxidative stress to all kinds of different neurons. So we have done things like glutamate excitotoxicity, which we know is a very important factor in axonal loss and neurodegeneration in progressive MS patients. We've looked at the two most relevant demyelinating models in MS, the Cuprizone model and the lysolecithin focal model of demyelination. We have looked at other oxidative stressors, like looking at 5-hydroxydopamine, or what's called MPP, in dopaminergic neurons. And we have looked at motor neurons. These are iPSC-derived human motor neurons. When they're co-cultured with astrocytes from ALS patients, those astrocytes will kill the motor neurons. But we have profound neuroprotection in all of these models and profound remyelination in the two most prominent models in MS. So we have a wealth of preclinical data showing that these nanocrystals support bioenergetic reactions. That is, they catalyze these important reactions that make energy within cells and especially within neurons. And we know that energy is important, and loss of energy production is a large part of why neurons die in diseases like MS.
Your nanocrystals are gold. Can you talk
pure gold?
Pure gold. Can you talk a little bit about what's special about gold besides the obvious?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So at the macro scale, gold is inert, right? It doesn't oxidize. That's why it's been used for jewelry for millions of years, or thousands of years anyway. But at the nanoscale, gold is quite reactive. And the reason for that is there is an unpaired electron in its outermost orbital. And that electron does some amazing things. It actually captured by the nucleus and reaches relativistic speeds, that is near the speed of light, in its orbit around the nucleus. And when you put these atoms together on the face of a surface face of a crystal, these atoms and these electrons form plasma. The electrons form plasmon clouds. And these plasmon clouds are available to actually be used, to given off into biological systems. And these plasmon clouds can actually accept electrons. So these clouds can actually donate or accept electrons depending on the environment. And we know that catalyzing biochemical reactions is involved with electron transfer. In fact, all of life involves electron transfer. If you think of mitochondria that generate the energy that cells use to generate life, that's all based on taking electrons, which are in higher energy orbital states in certain molecules, transferring those electrons to lower energy orbital states in other molecules, and using that energy of transfer, to generate ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is our sort of monetary exchange of energy within cells. And what we do with clean nanomedicine, what these crystals actually do is they promote ATP production within cells. They actually catalyze, that is, they lower the energy of activation of these bioenergetic reactions that make ATP. ATP is the fundamental energy molecule.
And if I'm following you a little bit, what's happening in terms of remyelination is these nanocrystals are the catalyst to create the energy that's missing in that remyelinating process?
That's exactly correct. So one of the conundrums of MS, which I'm sure you've heard from other, you know, other experts, is that you know, these cells that can generate remyelination, we call them OPCs, or oligodendrocyte precursor cells. These are sort of the stem cells of the glial cells that actually make myelin. These stem cells are there. These precursor cells are sitting there in the lesions, but they don't remyelinate. And it's one of the conundrums of MS. If you look at all the other areas where the brain is damaged, like stroke or, you know, brain trauma, the brain will remyelinate. There's an ability, you know, there's a large capacity for the brain to repair itself. But in MS, for whatever reason, there are several reasons actually, these OPCs are sitting there, but they don't remyelinate. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why there are a lot of companies that have tried to, you know, sort of force these oligodendrocytes to remyelinate. But what we have shown is that one of the main reasons they don't remyelinate is they don't have the energy. So if you think about these cells, these oligodendrocyte precursor cells, OPCs, they become oligodendrocytes. These are the cells that generate the myelin sheath on the axons. These myelin sheath are highly metabolically active. It's not like people think of it as like insulation on a wire. It's not like that at all. They're highly metabolically reactive. They actually support the axon. They give the axon energy. They take away its waste products. And if the axon loses its myelin sheath, it will die. So each one of these individual cells can generate from 20 to 50 internodes, 20 to 50 sections of myelin sheath on an axon. That is a lot of cellular metabolic processing that needs to take place. That requires a lot of energy. And what we have shown in multiple preclinical models, including the two most prominent models of remyelination in MS, is that by giving these cells the energy they need, they will profoundly remyelinate.
Well, I know at the recent ACTRIMS forum, you shared some updated information about two different phase two clinical trials that are currently underway. What can you share with us?
Well, there are two different studies that are, well, we have actually six different studies in various diseases that are ongoing, but the two studies in MS that are the most relevant are the REPAIR MS study, which is being run at the University of Texas Southwestern in conjunction with Dr. Benjamin Greenberg and the physicists there, and the Visionary MS study, which is currently being run at 8 centers in Australia, but we're in the process of opening up North American sites for this. So first, let's discuss the REPAIR MS study. So this study is designed to show target engagement for these gold nanocrystals. When we talk about target engagement, what that means is we're showing that these crystals actually get to the brains of people with disease, with MS, and they actually do something. They actually do something in terms of the bioenergetics of the brains of these patients in human beings. That's the whole idea of this study. Now, we're using a technology called P31MRS, which stands for Phosphorus 31 Magnetic Resonance Spectroscopy. Now, P31MRS is a way of looking at the bioenergetic molecules in the brains of human beings that are living. So we put them in a very powerful MRI magnet. Now, MS patients are very familiar with MRI magnets because they get MRIs quite often. But this magnet is a 7 Tesla magnet. So most MS patients will have been in a 1.5 Tesla magnet or maybe a 3 Tesla magnet, but there are only a few 7 Tesla magnets around. So it's a very powerful magnetic field. It requires a very special head coil. If you've ever been in an MRI magnet, you know that there's a coil that goes around the body part that gets imaged in order to focus the radio frequency that excites the molecules in order to generate the MRI image. In this case, we use very specialized head coils, which are designed by the physicist at UT Southwestern, in order to look at the bioenergetics in the brains of patients. And we can discriminate these bioenergetic molecules, many of them which contain phosphorus. That's why it's called P31 MR spectroscopy, because we're actually imaging phosphorus and the molecules that contain phosphorus. So we look at a specific molecule called NAD. It stands for nicotine adenine dinucleotide. which is the precursor to ATP formation. So if you have more NAD, you'll have more ATP. And what we've shown is that in MS patients, we can increase the amount of NAD in the brains of these patients by giving them CNM-AU8. So it's pretty cool. But the most important thing that we've shown is we can actually normalize the bioenergetics of these patients. And we do that by looking at ATP in the brains of these patients. And we can show that we can normalize ATP production within the brains of human beings with MS. It's pretty cool.
I would say that's an understatement, but yes, it is pretty cool.
And it's never been possible before. That's another thing that's also very cool.
Well, this is interesting on so many fronts. I think when people who are living with MS think about or talk about any sort of treatment or therapy, they tend to think about therapies that are aimed at the inflammatory response, right? And this, on the other hand, circumvents that.
Exactly. So there's a very famous neuropathologist from Vienna named Hans Lossmann, who's the sort of god of neuropathology in MS. He's a very, very famous guy. And he talks about the pathophysiology of MS. And he talks about the different stages of MS, right? The initial stage for the vast majority of people, 85% of people, you have these inflammatory attacks where the immune system comes and attacks MS. And we know that we have very good drugs for that now. These monoclonal antibodies are very effective in reducing these inflammatory attacks. But then there becomes a second stage of MS where you have this progression now. Now the attacks are much less frequent, but now people are getting worse over time. And we call that non-active progressive MS. It's this stage of the disease that we have no therapy for currently. And this is the stage of the disease where people are actually losing function. And then the last stage of the disease, which people don't really talk about, but he talks about quite a bit, is accelerated aging. So when people with MS age, they undergo accelerated aging. So the brain of a 60-year-old patient with MS can look like the brain of a 90-year-old person who doesn't have MS. So this accelerated aging and this non-inflammatory progression are the two stages of the disease for which there are no current therapies, and for which CNM-AU8, we believe, can be really a breakthrough.
So what's next for you?
Well, of course, because of the pandemic, pretty much all research in MS has been on hold because MS patients are immunocompromised from their disease-modifying therapies, and they really don't want to be in areas of high endemic exposure to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So unfortunately, our program is also on hold. Basically, it's delayed. So what we're going to do, though, is we've presented these interim clinical data from the Visionary MS study, the phase two, ongoing phase two placebo-controlled trial that we've been running. The plan is to complete that trial and to have positive proof of concept data and then to embark on a phase three clinical program in MS. The next step that we're considering would be a study in patients with primary progressive MS who are currently on ocrelizumab, which is the approved therapy for primary progressive MS, who may be having progression despite ocrelizumab. And we would actually put those patients on CNM-AU8 or placebo and see if we can make a difference.
Well, that sounds exciting. Dr. Robert Glanzman, I appreciate you talking with me today. We are certainly going to be looking forward to hearing more about CNM-AU8 and whatever name it eventually morphs into. And we'll be
easier.
Right. We'll be looking for information about the outcome of the clinical trials and your next stages for sure.
Thanks, Johnson. Thanks so much for your time.
Cognitive dysfunction is not only a common MS symptom affecting more than half of the people living with MS, but it's also one of the most debilitating. It ranks as the number one reason that people living with MS stop working. But receiving a cognitive assessment can be challenging. It relies on an extensive neuropsychological examination that can last for hours, and that sort of assessment isn't even available in many clinics. So a research team wanted to look at whether there was a simpler way to assess cognitive dysfunction among people living with MS. And in a small study, they tested the viability of a tablet-based, adaptive, video game-based approach. They recruited 100 adults with MS. Now, 33 of these study participants had cognitive impairment, and 67 had MS, but did not have cognitive impairment. They also recruited 24 adults without MS. Now, all the study participants had their cognition tested with the tablet-based game, along with more standard measures of quantifying cognitive ability. And the results of the study showed that the participants with MS who had cognitive impairment showed statistically worse performance in this video game-based test compared with participants without MS and the study participants with MS who had no cognitive impairment. The research team's analysis also revealed associations between a study participant's performance in the video game-based test and their walking speed. The study results indicate that this unsupervised, adaptive, video game-based digital program called EVO Monitor is a viable tool in measuring cognitive performance among people living with MS. And this holds a promise of making cognitive assessment faster, easier, and more accessible. We'll be looking for larger studies to further validate the results of this study. And if you'd like to review the study results, you'll find a link in today's show notes. We're less than 1 week away from the National MS Society's 2021 Public Policy Conference. Full disclosure, I look forward to this particular conference like a kid looks forward to Christmas. Not only does MS advocacy create real impact, but I've found that it creates an unmistakable feeling of empowerment. Joining me in a moment to talk about MS advocacy and the upcoming public policy conference is the MS Society's Executive Vice President of Advocacy and Healthcare Access, Barry Talenti. We're 1 week away from the MS Society's Public Policy Conference, and my guest today is the Executive Vice President of Advocacy and Healthcare Access for the National MS Society, Barry Talenti. This year's Public Policy Conference is a virtual conference, and just as we've done for 4 years running now, Barry's joining me to talk about this year's Public Policy Conference and the issues that MS activists will be discussing with our congressional representatives in the days following the conference. Full disclosure here, I'm an MS activist and a longtime political junkie, so it's a real pleasure for me to say welcome back to the podcast, Barry.
Thanks so much, John. It's great to be back. I can't believe this is our fourth time giving a little preview of the Public Policy Conference.
Well, that's something I am particularly proud of. So I thought we could start with kind of a very basic question, but an important one. What does it mean to be an MS activist?
It's such a great question. And I really, to sort of the parts of my soul, I really believe being an MS activist is about changing the world for the better. And, you know, advocacy is a place that, we get caught up in the politics and that can be really hard to see, but it's really about giving people their voice and then using that voice to make change. And when you watch people sort of step into advocacy for the first time or really see what it can do, it's a powerful moment.
What do you think it is that makes advocacy particularly important to people who are affected by MS?
You know, I've heard time and time again from people living with MS that advocacy, getting involved in advocacy, is a place where, I mean, one, it ignites their passion, but really it allows people to feel like they're taking control in the course of living with this really unpredictable disease. And it allows people that forum to ask for what they need in a powerful way and to not apologize for it. And really, I think, you know, MS is such a heterogeneous disease, and we talk about that all the time. But, you know, one of the great things that we like to tell people in advocacy is you're the expert on your MS, and go ahead and let elected officials and their staff know what that means to live with MS, what it's like for you. You're bringing that expertise forward, and that's what they need to make policy decisions.
Well, speaking of some of those policy decisions, while 2020 was a year that presented all of us with all sorts of brand new challenges, it was also a year of several MS advocacy wins. Would you mind sharing what some of those wins were?
I'll share a couple, John, but you're scooping my speech at Public Policy Conference a little bit. You know, it's true. 2020 provided an opportunity for more people to engage in MS activism. So MS activists really weighed in quite a bit on the different COVID-19 relief packages. And there's a lot in those pieces of legislation that's really helpful for people with MS living through an economic crisis and for people with health conditions overall. We also were really successful in federal funding for the MS research program through the Department of Defense. So through our advocacy in 2020, we got to another bump to $20 million for fiscal year 2021, which is where the federal government is right now. So lots of opportunities for MS activists to weigh in and lots of successes too.
You and I have had an opportunity to talk about the Public Policy Conference a few times now, but I always try to make sure that my newer listeners are up to speed on all this stuff. So can you please explain what the Public Policy Conference actually is and what this year's virtual Public Policy Conference is going to be like?
I'm happy to. So the Public Policy Conference is an event, but it, you know, really we think of it almost as the kickoff to our federal advocacy work for the entire year. And so the conference provides that opportunity to bring MS activists together to learn from each other and to learn from policy experts and experts on sort of the DC inside political stuff. There's opportunities to connect and network with other activists and really to become inspired and get engaged in activism throughout the year. So all of those goals that we have for the Public Policy Conference, you know, learning, inspiration, connection, all of those carry through to the virtual Public Policy Conference that we'll see too. So we've worked really hard to make sure all of those core elements are still there. People will have those opportunities to connect with each other. We'll have some fun. You know, MS activists can be a competitive bunch, so we're working that in a little bit too. We'll learn from policy experts. We have a great DC insider giving a talk. We'll hear from our MS caucus leads. So a lot of great things to look forward to. And a speaker that I'm super excited about, and I think many others in the MS community will be too, we'll have Gloria Estefan talking at the Public Policy Conference this year.
That sounds amazing. I look forward to the Public Policy Conference every year. This year, I'm really, really pleased to be connecting with my good friend and fellow activist, Marcus Jones, and he and I are going to be co-emceeing the conference. So we're both excited about that.
I'm excited about that too. I love that you and Marcus are going to have such an integral role in the conference. I think it's going to just make it so much more impactful. And you guys both just have this ability to connect with everyone. So I can't wait to see how it all comes together.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the priority issues are that the MS activists will be talking about with our legislators during virtual meetings in the days following the Public Policy Conference?
Right. So at the Public Policy Conference, we'll be focused on two priority issues. So the first will be federal funding for the MS research program at the Department of Defense. So that program has seen tremendous success and a tremendous boost in funding over the past few years. You know, we were at $6 million in 2019, that jumped to $16 million in 2020 and to $20 million for fiscal year 2021. So this year we'll be asking to maintain that level of funding at $20 million. And you know, it's really important that researchers have sort of that consistent funding to rely on. And also that we're good stewards of the program. And so, you know, we've had these increases. So we want to make sure that the funding and the research sort of catches up to the funding increases that we've had. So we want to be able to see the good work and good projects that come out of these funding increases. And so we need to maintain that level of funding for now. And then if we talk to the researchers and talk to the experts and see that even more funding is needed in the future, we'll go back and ask for that. But right now, we're asking for that level funding commitment of $20 million. The second issue we'll be talking about is expanding access to telehealth. This has been, right, one of the good things to come out of the pandemic, is telehealth had been really hard to get off the ground. There were always barriers. Well, we can't do it this. What about this? What about that? But the pandemic really gave us no choice but to turn to telehealth as a way for people to get the healthcare and services and treatments that they need. And now that we know it can work, we certainly don't want to turn back the clock. So we'll be talking to Congress about how do we maintain those gains that we've seen in telehealth since the pandemic and then build on it in the future.
You know, I always encourage everyone to get involved in advocacy. I found it to be the most empowering activity that someone can participate in. And I think one of the benefits of having a virtual public policy conference is being able to expand participation. We can have a lot more people participate virtually than we can fit into a ballroom. So what should someone do if they're interested in registering to virtually attend next week's public policy conference?
Right. Well, we're still taking registration and there's no cost for anyone to attend. And while we'd love for you to come and attend the full conference across 2 days, we are also more than happy to have people attend the parts of it that are you're able to and that work with your schedule. So registration's still available. You can find it on the Society's website, and it's getting pushed out still on all of our social media channels too. And if you have trouble finding it, you can reach out to msactivist@nmss.org or the MS Activist Twitter account, and we'll make sure to get that registration link out to you.
And I'll make sure to include that link in today's show notes to make it as easy as possible. And I would encourage anyone who is available for any part of the 2 days during the conference to drop in. I so much of what we talk about is being important to people living with MS. What are those things? Access to affordable medications, access to quality healthcare. Things like the convenience of telehealth that we've all discovered this year. Well, all those things become issues of public policy. The things that we as a community ask for the most and consider the most important are the very things that we look to the legislative branch to provide. And all that work, all that advocacy, all that effort, it really comes together at the conference. As always, Barry, I want to thank you and your entire team for all of the effort involved in not only putting together the public policy conference, but in guiding our advocacy efforts so that we continue to see legislative outcomes that truly benefit the entire MS community. And thanks for talking with me today.
Well, thanks for having me, John. And we are very excited for you to have an even bigger role at the public policy conference this year. So I will see you there very soon.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/185. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. Just a quick reminder that if you haven't yet taken our online listener survey, you still have time. Completing the survey will take you less than 7 minutes, but it will allow me to learn a little more about the Real Talk MS listener community, and you'll be entered into a drawing for a $100 Amazon gift card. You'll find the survey at realtalkms.com/survey. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.